Yesterday, two select committees flexed their muscles and drew a worldwide attention to their inquiries on phone hacking. Today, the more traditional setting of the floor of the House of Commons was the venue everyone was looking at. Reporting for PM live from Westminster, our chief political correspondent, Norman Smith.
Eddie, the Prime Minister today came to the Commons to try and finally drive a stake through the heart of the issue that has dogged him throughout this hacking scandal, the Coulson question.
I want to address my own responsibilities very directly, and that brings me to my decision to employ Andy Coulson.
The hiring of Mr. Coulson as Director of Communications is the one clear link that has tied Mr. Cameron inextricably to the hacking scandal, particularly since Mr. Coulson's arrest over corruption allegations. So, in the Commons this afternoon, Mr. Cameron set about severing that link created following his decision to recruit the former editor of the News of the World.
I regret, and I am extremely sorry about the furore it has caused. With 20-20 hindsight and all that has followed, I would not have offered him the job, and I expect that he wouldn't have taken it. But you don't make decisions in hindsight. You make them in the present. You live and you learn, and believe you me, I have learnt.
It was all a far cry from the Mr. Cameron of only a few days ago. Then the Prime Minister defended Mr. Coulson as a friend, someone who deserved a second chance. Indeed, he repeatedly rebuffed those journalists who challenged him to apologise. Today, it was rather different.
If it turns out I've been lied to, that would be a moment for a profound apology. And in that event, I can tell you I will not fall short.
It was a bold attempt to kill off the Coulson question, which, understandably, the Labour leader Ed Miliband was equally determined to keep well and truly alive.
It's not about hindsight, Mr. Speaker. It's not about whether Mr. Coulson lied to him. It is about all the information and warnings that the Prime Minister ignored. He was warned, and he preferred to ignore the warning.
And there was one further new twist in the Coulson saga, this time centering on Mr. Coulson's time inside Downing Street rather than his time on the News of the World. The new allegation came from the former Labour Minister Nick Rainsford.
Will the Prime Minister confirm that a year ago, during the period when Mr. Coulson was Director of Communications, the Cabinet Secretary was alerted to evidence of illegal phone hacking, covert surveillance, and hostile media briefing directed against a senior official in the government service? What action, if any, was taken to investigate what appears to have been disgraceful and illegal conduct close to the heart of government?
But Eddie, just as Mr. Cameron today sought to close down the Coulson question, a new front appears to have opened up in the hacking saga, one that seemed to cause Mr. Cameron serious difficulties. It centred on the B Sky B bid, with questions like this from the Labour MP Dennis Skinner.
The Prime Minister has been asked a simple question twice and refused to answer it. As Prime Minister, did he ever discuss the question of the B Sky bid with News Internationals at all the meetings that they attended?
I never had one inappropriate conversation. And let me be clear.
Inappropriate conversation? Again and again, Mr. Cameron was pressed over his involvement in the B Sky B bid.
The discussion I had was to make sure I wasn't involved in this decision. So I didn't discuss it with the Culture Secretary. I didn't know about the timing of many of the key announcements. I wasn't involved. I completely took myself out of any decision-making about this bid. I had no role in it. I had no role in when the announcements were going to be made. That is the point.
More than half a dozen times, Mr. Cameron failed to categorically deny talking to the Murdoch team about the B Sky B bid. He was pressed one last time by Labour's Graham Jones.
Have you ever uttered the word B Sky B in the presence of Rebecca Brooks, Rupert Murdoch or James Murdoch?
Well, despite Mr. Cameron's apparent weariness of the line of questioning, tonight Downing Street said they could not rule out the possibility that Mr. Cameron may have discussed the B Sky B bid in private conversations with News International executives. Eddie, the hacking saga, it seems, may just have received a new lease of life.
Norman Smith at Westminster. I've been talking about all of this with the Foreign Secretary, William Hague. Mr. Hague, how would you rate the Prime Minister's judgment during this entire phone hacking business, from the hiring of Andy Coulson to today?
Well, I'd rate it very highly. I think people who listened to the debate today would see a Prime Minister who has been candid, who has been decisive, who today showed the necessary leadership to Parliament, appealing for a cross-party approach to tackle a problem that he admits has become a serious problem in the country, and challenging the opposition to recognise that as well. And those are qualities that I know him for, having worked with him closely over the last 6 years, and I think they're entirely undiminished by what has happened.
When you say you rate his judgment very highly and that he's been decisive and showing leadership, you don't think that at times, in recent times on this, he's been prone to chopping and changing his mind?
No, I don't think. I think he's been entirely consistent, and he was one of the first to say that, yes, there's a problem in the relationship between the media and politicians, and clearly a serious problem has emerged in the relationship between the media and the police. He was quick to say that that should all be investigated. He set out today the further details of how that will be investigated and who will be doing it, to general support and agreement, even on the opposition benches, with the people that he proposes to appoint to the various inquiries. And so I think that has been handled extremely well. It is a long-running problem. He said that he and all of us have failed on this in the past. But he's recognised that, and I think that's a great quality in a Prime Minister.
But even in just the last few weeks, he said publicly he didn't want a judge-led inquiry, and then he said he did. He didn't support the withdrawal of the BSkyB bid, and then he said he did. He has changed his mind several times on important facts.
Well, look, he's always removed himself from the decision-making about BSkyB. He's always been very adamant about that.
He voted in support of the BSkyB bid being withdrawn.
Yes, but remember, the situation has changed as the weeks have gone by, and new evidence has come to light, new allegations have been made, new admissions have been made, and so the facts have accumulated on this. Had he or any of us known all the things that we know now, well then clearly a lot of these decisions could have been made earlier, but that is with the benefit of hindsight. I think given how matters have come to light over the last few weeks, the Prime Minister has conducted himself extremely properly and with alacrity and with a ready admission of problems in the past, and that admission and the transparency about it hasn't always come from the other side of the House.
But it's about judgment, isn't it? I mean, it's not just about new facts emerging. There were plenty of people saying we needed a judge-led inquiry, and the Prime Minister was saying no. There were plenty of people saying, forget plurality, the BSkyB bid needs to be withdrawn, and he said no. And then he changed his mind on both of them. Are you still satisfied that his judgment has been very sound?
Well, yes, absolutely, because as I say, when you think of the BSkyB, this is something on which he always took no part. And so, of course, he was pursuing that approach for a long time. As now, so many things have come to light. The mood in the House of Commons, the mood in the country, wanted to make itself felt about that. And so a vote was passed in the House of Commons, but the Prime Minister continued to remove himself from that decision-making. So I think his approach has been consistent, but I think more important than any consistency, it is the right approach to say, let us deal with this, let's look into things thoroughly, let's be completely transparent. He has published the list of all his meetings, private or official, with executives of News International and other news organisations since the last general election. And I think it's transparency that on all of these difficult issues that have been uncovered in recent weeks, transparency, as ever, is going to be the cleaning agent in all of this that allows us to clean up what has gone wrong.
When you led the Conservative Party, how important was it to you personally to meet senior people from News International?
It's always been important to party leaders to have some sort of relationship with the media. You know, if you go back to the time of my hero, William Pitt, 200 years ago, the government just used to pay some of the newspapers.
Don't plug your book.
To take the government line. I wasn't mentioning anything about a book. They used to pay newspapers to take the government line. There's always been some form of relationship between
political
leaders.
But specifically
News
International and your relationship with them when you were party leader, how important was it for you to meet them?
Well, it was quite important. They were not in my favour at that time. I remember the Sun doing a front page, which was me as a dead parrot, and saying the Conservative Party has ceased to squawk. So, of course, an improved relationship was one that I was seeking at that time. But I think it's true that across politics it's been important. It has been to Gordon Brown, to Tony Blair. They have spent acres of their time courting executives of News International.
Do you know how many times you met people from News International? Well, it's a very long time ago. I'm not going to pin you down on a figure, but was it a lot?
In my case, I don't think it would be a lot by comparison with some of the party leaders like Tony Blair, who were on the other side at the time. I don't have any figures I could compare to David Cameron.
Well, I can give you some figures. What do you think the Prime Minister discussed in his 26 meetings in 15 months with News International executives? Do you think it was the weather or the Simpsons or...?
Oh, and politics and government in this country and elsewhere.
B Sky Bean.
And, well, he's made the position very clear.
No, he hasn't.
And yes, he has. And, well, I'll tell you what he's made very clear, that he takes no part in the decision-making about that.
But that's not telling us what he discussed.
Yeah, but in a sense, that is a second-order question, because really? The most important thing is, does the Prime Minister, has the Prime Minister played any role in any of the decision-making about the B Sky B merger? And the answer is no.
So why can't we know what they discussed?
Well, because the most important thing of all is that it's actually, first of all, it would be irrelevant, given that what I've just said.
You've just been talking about transparency, being the cleansing agent.
And secondly, he has said, and Rebecca Brooks has said, that there are two sides of any such conversation, that nothing inappropriate.
Oh, so we take their word for it.
Well, since nobody else would have been there, I think you're going to struggle to take anybody else's word for it. And I'm sure that is correct. And I'm sure, in any case, that it has no bearing on the matter because he has so strictly removed himself from it. And I've often heard him say, I'm in and out of 10 Downing Street most days when I am in the
front
country,
door.
And I have often, sometimes I go through the back door, and I'm the Foreign Secretary, so that is not unknown either. But I've often heard him say that I will have nothing, the Prime Minister, will have nothing to do with any decision-making about that or any information about that. So he has taken an absolutely correct approach to that issue.
Do you think Mr Cameron was willfully blind when it came to warnings about Andy Coulson?
No, I think he made a judgment, which he has said today, that with hindsight, he regrets that. He decided, as he's explained in previous weeks, to give him a second chance. He was, after all, somebody who was very good at his job. Nobody has criticised, as the Prime Minister was saying today, nobody criticised the way Andy Coulson was doing his job. And so he decided to give him a second chance. Clearly, that's something that he now regrets.
But in reaching that decision about giving him a second chance, do you think he was willfully blind? As you know, the Labour MP, Tom Watson, said he raised concerns about Andy Coulson's conduct when he'd worked for the Prime Minister in a letter last October, following allegations that Andy Coulson had listened to tapes of intercepted voicemail messages. Mr Watson wrote to the Prime Minister, but is still waiting for a reply. Do you think Mr Cameron might have just wanted to keep that at arm's length?
No, I don't think he was willfully blind. I think in the life of a minister or politician, people raise hundreds of concerns about many things every day and every week.
Michael Crick famously wrote to you about Geoffrey Archer and didn't get a
reply. Yes, and you have to make your own judgment about these things, and if your judgment is correct, nobody ever hears about it again, and if it's wrong, well then of course it becomes one of these controversies, and so they do happen from time to time. But the Prime Minister has said that very openly. He's not denying that. He made his own judgment about it. He's spoken of his regret about that with hindsight, but he made his own judgment. He doesn't blame anybody else for it. And I think, again, that was part of what we saw in the House of Commons, was him taking responsibility, being candid, but showing the way for the future, which are the characteristics we know him for.
The 6 years you've been working with the Prime Minister, slipping in the front and back door of No. 10 Downing Street, would the Prime Minister, do you think, call you a friend?
Yes, I hope so.
Do you hope he's a truer friend to you than he's been to Andy Coulson?
Well, look, you don't keep someone in office because they are your friend. They also have to perform, be confident in their ability to do so. And in the case of Andy Coulson, he decided that it was not possible for him to continue with his job, given all the allegations.
But after all of that, after the job stopped continuing, 4 months ago, As recently as that, Mr. Coulson was invited to Chequers. 2 weeks ago, and you've referred to this, the Prime Minister referred to Andy Coulson repeatedly as a friend. But then, when people began to question the Prime Minister's judgment as never before, Mr. Cameron no longer calls him a friend and says, oh, with hindsight, I wouldn't have appointed him. How true a friend is the Prime Minister, do you think?
Well, I know him as a very true friend, and that is shown, actually, in his behaviour, which I think, as I said at the weekend, is a positive side to his character, when somebody who has resigned amidst very unpleasant allegations of a very unpleasant activity, nevertheless, he invites them, which is normal human behaviour, afterwards, to reflect on it and to thank them for their work. Now, I think that is commendable in any organisation. But, of course, that's not inconsistent with saying that in view of what has happened and what has been said, it is a regret that he took him on.
Finally, do you think Andy Coulson might be his Geoffrey Archer?
Well, I don't think it's possible to compare those different things.
In terms of judgment, I'm not talking about wrongdoing.
Yes, you're asking me really to speculate about something where there are legal processes and police investigations in place. So I don't think it would be right to speculate about that. But I do think the Prime Minister has shown a great ability to show the way forward, to get on top of this subject, and now it strengthens our ability to deal with all the many other subjects with which governments must deal.
William Hague. While we've been on the air tonight, David Cameron has been meeting the 1922 committee of Tory MPs. Presumably he'll listen back on the iPlayer. Carol Walker has been hovering outside the committee room. What's been going on, Carol?
Well, I can tell you, Eddie, that we had a quick word with the Prime Minister as he was waiting to go in, and he was certainly in fighting mood after that prolonged appearance in the House of Commons. And as he went into the room, you could hear some lengthy banging of desks in approval. And afterwards, a senior source from the Conservative group said that it was the warmest reception he could remember a Prime Minister receiving. Now, what David Cameron told his MPs is that he believed that on hacking, the government had been decisive, frank and transparent. But he said he'd make no apology for trying to get the support of the media in the run-up to the general election, because that was what the Conservatives needed to do at that stage. He said that now there was a real opportunity to reset the clock for a generation in terms of the relationship between the media and politicians. But he wanted to talk not just about hacking, but about the economy, because he said that was really the biggest challenge. He talked about the tough economic times we were facing with difficulties in the Eurozone and in the United States, and urged his MPs to keep taking on those big arguments about the economy, about the need to tackle the deficit, and about some of the other things that the government was doing in terms of welfare and on immigration and the armed forces. Interestingly enough, Eddie, we're told there were only about 7 or 8 questions, and none of them were about hacking.
And let's hope they were all appropriate. Carol, thank you so much. Carol Walker at Westminster.